folks. You're listening to the Mad Dog, Matt Wilson, and you're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Will Biden end the U.S. forever war in Afghanistan? I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Biden announced a complete troop withdrawal from what he called the forever war in Afghanistan by September 11th.
Only the Afghans have the right and responsibility to lead their country.
President Biden speaking from the Treaty Room, the same room in the White House where President George W. Bush announced the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in October 2001. In the two decades since, over 100,000 Afghan civilians have been killed, along with 45,000 members of the Afghan army and police, and at least 3,500 U.S. and coalition troops. Zahir Wahab knows well the impact of the invasion and occupation on his home country of Afghanistan. Wahab, a professor of education for decades, splits his time between the U.S. and Afghanistan. Since the 2001 invasion, he's been helping rebuild Afghanistan's shattered education system.
This invasion and occupation and the bloodshed have destroyed the country, its economy, its institutions, its infrastructure, its education, its way of life. Relationships among the different ethnic groups. This occupation has been nothing short of a catastrophe.
Professor Wahab was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
The United States and its allies should never have attacked and occupied Afghanistan. It was wrong, it was illegal, and I think it was immoral. The war may end for the United States, but the war will intensify for Afghanistan. Unless something must be done, and that is that we need to constitute a UN peacekeeping force immediately.
There are no plans yet for UN peacekeepers, and a central demand of the Taliban in the ongoing peace negotiations is a complete withdrawal of foreign forces by May 1st, the date set by President Trump. Biden's delayed troop withdrawal may start then, but will it be as complete as promised?
This does not include the thousands of men and women who are part of U.S. Special Operation and NATO Special Operation teams, CIA teams, as well as the, literally dozens of squadrons of attack aircraft and bombers, whether they be manned or droned, that are in the area.
That's Matthew Ho speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He was a Marine in the occupation of Iraq, followed by a State Department position in Afghanistan. He resigned in 2009 in protest of President Obama's escalation of the war.
The potential for the United States to remain involved militarily is quite high, even if all 3,500 acknowledged U.S. troops are withdrawn, as well as the NATO troops. The devastation on the Afghan people is hard to imagine. That 2.5 million refugees are what's registered right now. But there have been millions and millions of refugees for the last 40 years. For most of these last 40 years, the Afghans have been the largest refugee population in the world, with the exception of a period of time when the Syrians were. But as the Syrians go back, as that war has wound down, the Afghans, I believe, are once again the largest refugee population in the world. It's something like 70% of Afghans subsist on a dollar a day. There is no industry in Afghanistan to speak of.
The most recent estimate of the financial cost to the United States of the war in Afghanistan over the past 20 years from Brown University's Cost of War Project is $2.3 trillion, which could have built a lot of infrastructure in both Afghanistan and in the United States. Instead, the U.S. bought weapons, built soon-to-be-abandoned bases, and endlessly cycled troops through repeated deployments. Care for injured veterans and debt on the money borrowed to wage war will continue to cost U.S. taxpayers for decades to come. This doesn't count the billions spent arming the Afghan Mujahideen to fight the invading Soviet army during the 1980s, arms and training turned against the United States and its allies decades later. On September 14, 2001, days after the Al-Qaeda attacks on the U.S., California Congresswoman Barbara Lee spoke on the House floor opposing military action against Afghanistan.
Now, I have agonized over this vote, but I came to grips with it today, and I came to grips with opposing this resolution during the very painful yet very beautiful memorial service. As a member of the clergy so eloquently said, as we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
Congressmember Lee gave that speech just before casting the lone vote against the Authorization for Use of Military Force, or AUMF, which remains in effect to this day. This week, Lee applauded Biden's announced troop withdrawal, adding, "This is the result of decades of hard work by activists, advocates, and members of Congress committed to ending our forever wars. We must utilize this momentum to rein in executive war powers and put that power back in the hands of Congress and the people," she said. Lee is also leading a group of 50 House members who sent a letter to President Biden urging him to slash the Pentagon budget. She said in a statement, "As we face a global pandemic and unprecedented economic crisis, the needs of American families far outweigh the need to continue feeding our bloated military defense budget." California Congressmember Ro Khanna, a co-signer of the letter, spoke on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
If you're ending the forever war in Afghanistan, as the president pointed out, that should save about $50 billion a year, then why are we increasing at the same time the defense budget? We need to look at where the numbers are being allocated and have a strategic reduction and allocate that instead in the threats that the United States faces: potential pandemics, climate change, cybersecurity.
Ending the war in Afghanistan should be a beginning, accompanied immediately by reparations to the Afghan people. President Biden should also end U.S. military interventions elsewhere, starting with Iraq, and cut the military budget. After decades of war, let's give peace a chance. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXC helps you sleep at night and stay awake in the daytime. Whether at work or play, in good times and in bad, no matter the weather, community radio brings you local news, agricultural information, music and sounds, oratory, and radio stews.
90.7 FM, WGXC.
Back and groove with mine. You gotta feel that. Welcome to Clubhouse Radio, live from the Castviews Clubhouse on 90.7 FM WGXC, broadcasting Acra, Catskill, and Hudson. That song was Rock With You by Michael Jackson. Stay tuned for great music, discussion, and two interviews with two very worthy people. We will kick off our show after the local news and weather.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, April 16th. Early this morning, it's 32 degrees in Twilight Park and 39 in Kingston. Light rain is expected all day. Any remaining snow ends by 9 a.m. Temperatures reach 48 degrees by 5 p.m. Overnight, rain tapers off and temperatures reach down to 40 degrees. Tomorrow will be dry with a light breeze and a high of 55. Sunday gets a little warmer, reaching 60 degrees. However, there is a little bit of an afternoon rain expected. Pollen levels for today will be low. The weekend, however, gets into the medium-high territory by Sunday. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 12:23 a.m., high tide at 6:12 a.m., low tide again at 1:13 p.m., and high tide again at 7:09 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 60 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:22 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:09 a.m. Looking way up, we see G1 class storms are expected for tomorrow. Solar wind speed is currently 456 kilometers per second at 6.2 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently very poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 22. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton reports for Columbia Green Media that the COVID-19 pandemic may last longer in Greene County than elsewhere, as supply is now outstripping demand for the vaccines. Legislature Chair Patrick Linger says several hundred doses of vaccines went unused this week. Linger said, and I quote, "We're getting to the point where supply is increasing enough to be able to hit most of the people who are going to want a vaccine, which is not anywhere near where the state or CDC sees as herd immunity," end quote. Only about 38% of adults in Greene County have received at least one dose of a vaccine, far short of the 70% that scientists say is needed to end the pandemic. News this week about possible problems with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine may be affecting turnouts. Linger said, and I quote, "It was almost like turning on a light switch," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Last week, we had an easy time filling pods. This week, it's exactly the opposite, and we'll probably wind up sending doses back. Our emergency operations manager was expecting we'd have another week or two before hitting that saturation point. It's really showing up as being challenging to fill the vaccine slots," end quote. Greene County Public Health has open appointments for vaccines at the New Baltimore Firehouse on April 19th. And April 26th in Ashland. And you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Sarah Trapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Catskill Village Board selected a new village president at its organizational meeting April 14th. Peter Gross III, a Republican, was picked by board members to succeed Vincent Seeley. Gross was elected in March to a second term on the board. Seeley resigned January 8th after a four-month absence related to a new business venture. Catskill Village presidents are appointed by the village board and are not directly elected by voters. Village Vice President Joseph Kozlowski has served as acting president following Seeley's departure. In remarks April 14th, Gross said he did not expect to take on the leadership role when he first ran for office. He said, and I quote, "I just wanted to get in there and make a difference," end quote. Gross said he enjoys being part of the village government, and I quote, "I enjoy listening to the concerns of residents, and I like to think everything out before I make a decision. Trying to make the right decision all the time is key," end quote. Gross's priority list includes getting the village's finances in order maintaining the parks and making sure everything is looking its best so everyone can enjoy the summer. The village has some major infrastructure projects coming up, including a new water main for Main Street and a settling pond for a water treatment plant, as well as some new development coming to the village, such as Taco Bell, Well Now, and more. Grass said, and I quote, "I'm excited to get to work," end quote. Kozlowski will continue to serve as vice president. Grassi said a special election will be held at a later date to fill Seeley's unexpired term. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Ariana Jimenez is reporting for the Legislative Gazette. Under new legislation approved April 14th by the state Senate, the right to vote would be restored to formerly incarcerated people in New York immediately upon release from prison. The corresponding assembly bill, sponsored by Assemblymember Daniel O'Connor, is on its third reading. Under the measure, people would not have to wait until they have reached the final date of their sentence to register to vote or to vote in an election. O'Donnell said, and I quote, "There is a need for people who have been formerly incarcerated to reintegrate into society in every way possible," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Other parts of the United States have begun to restore voting rights. Parole is a tough thing to survive while you are living in the community and living the law-abiding life. The right to participate in the democracy of voting should not be impeded," end quote. O'Donnell's bill would permanently restore the vote to individuals released on parole and require officials to give newly eligible voters an opportunity to register upon release. Sean Morales Doyle, the deputy director of the Voting Rights and Elections Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, said that under existing New York law, those people convicted of felonies who have been released from prison cannot vote while they are under community supervision unless they have had the right restored by a certificate of release, a certificate of good conduct, or a pardon from the governor. And I quote, "New Yorkers who have been released from prison are working, paying taxes, and raising families, but they have no voice in the government. Today's Senate vote brings them a step closer to regaining that voice," end quote. And you can read the full story in the Legislative Gazette. Melanie Lekachevic is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Following months of debate, the Athens Village Board April 14th adopted a law prohibiting parking on the west side of North Franklin Street. Local law number 5 of 2021 was approved due to safety concerns over the width of the street and emergency vehicle access. A public hearing was held on October 28th and again on March 24th to gauge public reaction to the new law. Mayor Amy Sirago said officials from the fire department, police department, and Department of Public Works were also consulted. She said, and I quote, "We have heard everyone on this subject," end quote. Former Mayor Stephen Bradadich, who left office at the beginning of April, and DPW Chief Anthony Proper measured the streets to determine if emergency vehicles are able to get through if cars are parked on both sides of the road. Sirago said village officials have determined the width of the street makes parking on both sides dangerous. Village trustee Joshua Lipsman said of reducing the parking on one side of the street, and I quote, "I am feeling that we should not take anything from our residents unless we absolutely have to, and which we must on the northernmost portion of the street for safety," end quote. Department of Public Works Director Anthony Proper said, and I quote, "What is the big inconvenience? Because they have to park their car on one side and walk an extra 5 steps to get into their house," end quote. Proper said only a couple of residents will have to move their vehicles to the opposite side and that safety during plowing season and clearing the roads is critical. When it came time to vote on the law, Lipsman was the lone dissenter. The mayor said new signs will be posted and residents will be notified by the village when the law goes into effect. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Wayfarm's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Wayfarm Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Here's what we do with the clubhouse. It be fun at the clubhouse. Music stay loud at the clubhouse. Staff be cool at the clubhouse. Not just mine, just your house. Music program with the clubhouse. Got a drum set at the clubhouse. Got a piano at the clubhouse. Make your own beats at the clubhouse. Get on the video with the clubhouse. Share your voice at the clubhouse. Express yourself at the clubhouse. Tracks program at the clubhouse. Be yourself at the clubhouse. No judgment at the clubhouse. No drama at the clubhouse. We accept you at the clubhouse. Got field trips at the clubhouse. Got art supplies at the clubhouse. Creativity at the clubhouse. Paint your own wall at the clubhouse. Got a TV at the clubhouse. Got Wi-Fi at the clubhouse. Food and snacks at the clubhouse. Hope to see you at the clubhouse.
You are just listening to an original clubhouse theme song in our track music program by DJ WIC. Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio. I am DJ Ricky. I'm here with
Sound Engineer Sean Money.
And
this is Ma Badila of Data Data International Folkloric Theater.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so all views expressed on Clubhouse Radio are our truth. You may not represent the views and opinions of the Clubhouse's parent organization or the Mental Health Association of Columbia. So, Mrs. Badila, you have a theater production called Fire Dance, right, coming out soon, May 23rd?
They're starting on May 21st, and the production is one in a series of, which will now be the 16th, of these community theater projects where children perform with their parents, people from all socioeconomic and cultural groups are going to participate in a production which will be a bonding, grounding event which celebrates community. In effect, we do these deliberately to engage in the understanding of a very humble place we have to find ourselves in with regard to being part of a world community. In effect, there's a concept we call in traditional African culture. It's called Ubuntu, where we understand that I am because we are. And then we recognize that we are as a collective because I am. Each individual of the collective is so important that the collective is not whole without them. And again, they are not fully engaged in all their potential without their connection to the wholeness of which is their collective community. And so we build world community by understanding these productions are always from some culture here. We go to China, we go to Yugoslavia, we go to Nigeria, tell stories that come from different people, different perspectives so that we can get to know each other as a global community. Fire dance is an essential understanding of the fire within us that gives us the passion, the verve, the essence that gives us the want to survive. And then the dance is just us acknowledging and telling our stories, conducting a proper ownership of our own narrative and bringing back the essential power and verve and passion of life as it once was a celebration, not an endurance. People go up and go to work, come back, and they're stressed and they're tired and they have all this imbalance that comes from not realizing life is a most wonderful adventure when you acknowledge the full potential of all that you are living for, which means not just go to work and go home, but engage in the day. Make it one of a kind, one day being only one day, and you make an adventure out of all the experiences which you endure and which you engage in throughout every single day of your life. We celebrate life this way. And these stories we're telling, because it's a selection of stories of what we call First Nation people, the very first of the nations that occupy a place, the indigenous people. And so them being the essentials of who you see here before everything else happened, the Holocaust that happened to them, millions and millions of them destroyed, displaced. We're not going to tell that story. We're going to tell the story that they tell their children. Animal stories, learn about the character, learn about integrity, to realize how it is to play fairly and to understand what it means to share a forest, to understand we're neighbors in a world and we must look at each other with the simple reciprocity of giving and receiving. And it's not so difficult when we realize we're sitting in an abundance where there's everything we need. But we often forget that with the introduction of the me-ism, the greed of I want it all. That's a very grave error that humans have been afflicted with. It's like a sickness. And it can be healed through the understanding of what Ubuntu means, what community means, and what our true and humble place within a community recognizably requires. You must acknowledge the giving and receiving to be a fully integrated member of a society, of a community. You must realize to be humble, you must be able to give as much as you are prepared to take. It's not so hard.
So how long would you say it took you to make all these stories and all this stuff?
Well, many of the stories I take from learning traditional folklore of different people. And there are many, 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 many stories that I find intriguing, and some of them are so powerful in their lessons. Like the one story of Anansi's six children who each had magical powers. And their six magical powers were able to save their father's life when he was in danger. But those very same children became almost enemies when he was going to give a gift, the moon, to only one who did the most. That's the way we forget who we are when we only see one, me, just myself and my gifts.
Selfishness.
Yeah. And then the whole idea of ego where we have it, but it must not overcome our sense of integrity. It must not overwhelm our sense of community, where we realize you might have a lot, but your neighbor has a lot as well. And if you only see your own gifts, you cannot acknowledge and appreciate theirs. So it's a lesson of life when we learn how to step back a little bit and let others have an opportunity to shine. We all are brilliant. We all shine. But if we don't let another person shine, we tend to put them in the dark. And we overwhelm them with our brilliance. And it's really not fair. We don't get to learn what they could have offered by not allowing them to shine. These are the types of things we try to teach, because every story is a lesson. This is why we tell stories. In fact, I told you once before, people say you need stories more than bread. It's a symbol. It's an expression that just says stories are nurturing. Let them feed you. And they teach you. They feed your mind. Feeding your mind helps yourself understand where you stand, where you belong, where you are going, because you have a rooted understanding of what are the values that are intrinsic to your development. And then that gives you a good footing, a good sense of what I should be looking forward to and what I should be avoiding, because I'll break away from my good character. I want to build a strong personality and character where I can see to myself as growing in a sense that's productive, where I could be welcomed anywhere because I'm honest. I could be appreciated because I'm giving. I'm not only taking. And it's very important, these stories, because it's children and their parents working together with their neighbors, performing, rehearsing. They bond, and some of these bonds have gone on and on for many, many years. People have become friends over these stories. Adults in the community who are civic leaders, who are shop owners, who have even been in political positions on the school board and all this. Many of those people have performed in these plays over the years. We began in 2002 when we had the director of the youth center, youth department, former mayor Dick Tracy. He found it in his heart to believe in the programming that we proposed. And from then on, we started doing these plays. Jan Hanvik, who was the director of the Columbia County Council on the Arts, he put a lot of effort into finding us funding, teaching us how to apply for these grants. And now over time, we have come to have lists of people like the CREATE, the organization now, which was the Council on the Arts of Greene County. It's the Council for Resources to Enrich the Arts, Technology, and Education. They are the basic management organization for these artists' grants funding to help us who have these stories to tell, be able to take care of funds, you know, for the expenses of doing what you do, and then getting the materials that you need. And of course, we have major, major funding. The Mental Health Association of Columbia and Greene Counties has been behind the last few plays we've produced with support, advice, and encouragement, and it's been vital because otherwise it would have been very difficult. And then, of course, you have WJXC Radio, who the great elder Alan Skerritt, and the new youth progressor. I mean, I really appreciate that you're taking on programming and learning how to engage in community dynamics of communicating what's happening in your community, because that means you're going to grow up understanding the value of that enriching rapport with the communication, and also you're going to learn about all these things that are going on that you might have ignored if you were not involved in promoting it for people. So it's fantastic. We've had people in the community, like organizations, the Hawthorne Valley Association came down and gave us some help. Light Form Studio with Laura Summer. I mean, people all around have been looking at what we're doing and realizing this is a message that teaches us in a simple way, stories. That everybody loves stories, but in that story, like this year, Fire Dance, it's a story dealing with redemption. I mean, we do things that we could regret. I make mistakes, I'll probably make many more. But if I want to truly find peace in my heart and be forgiven, or find redemption, I have to first start with forgiving myself. I can't constantly think of, dang, I messed up, well, I should have done. You can't catch it back. Should, would, could. You can't catch that. What you have to do is from here, I'm going to be more mindful and listen more carefully before I respond to something that I hear. Maybe I'll find that that person was going to say something that linked into what I had on my mind, and we pretty much agreed before I even started the argument, that kind of thing. And you could just, anything. It could have even been something very, very big, very deep, very harsh that you did wrong to yourself or to others. Forgiveness is vital in moving on with our lives. When we live in guilt and shame, we cannot progress. And if you cannot forgive, sometimes that weight of the pain or the anguish that someone put on you, it's weight on you. You can't continue with your heart light when you have that weight there. So it's important to deal with what we call redemption. And so this play deals with stories where wrong has been committed. Mm-hmm. At the same time, redemption has happened for a cause. And I don't want to give away how and why, but it's very important to know, even though you're forgiven, things don't always have to go your way. Afterward, there are still consequences.
Personally, how do you feel like your play is going to go? Like, do you feel like it'll inspire or give other people a proper message?
I have been, I'm going to say, very humbled by the great outpouring of support that we receive everywhere we go, every organization, everybody, even individuals as well as groups, have shown us so much love and honor and respect what we're doing. I mean, even, for example, we're performing at the Basilica Hudson. They hosted us in 2012, and things were going difficultly for us. We had a hard time in other ways, and that was the year my husband passed, and it was like, how are we going to go through with this? It was like too much, you know? They came in like, they just swooped us off of the feeling of it's not going to be able to happen by allowing us to happen here, where we needed all the support we could get, and everywhere we turned, support came through. You know, the Opera House, we did it there, and Camp Hill, and the schools, and everywhere we've gone. We found that when we needed community to support what we were doing, and they knew what we were doing and why we were doing it, there was never anything but open doors. So we believe that's a sign of how well it received. The audiences standing up at the last performance or the end of every performance, the way people have come and made offerings at the end of a show. In fact, one time we did a show with John L. We did Ambrosia. It was a celebration of stories from around the world, from different continents. And a couple came up and they gave us a very big donation. And she said, I felt like I was on Broadway. It wasn't a big Broadway kind of production. We didn't have all the pizzazz, but they saw the effort we put into it, the costume, the decor, the props. They saw we tried our best to make it wondrous. And because we tried so hard to bring that effect, it was indeed wondrous. And the story still stood as a lesson and an example of community building. So I believe, to answer your question, oh well, we're going to receive great, great support. I can feel it already. And we're thankful to mention again Basilica Hudson. The flyer, it was misprinted Basilica Industria. It's Basilica Hudson, who has very generously offered us to use their space. And the production, of course, is May 21st, 22nd at 7 p.m., and May 23rd at 5 p.m. All performances are free, as they have always been since 2002, open to the public. And, of course, due to the COVID restrictions, we do have to require that you wear a mask when you come there. And I'd ask you to call 518-653-2086 to establish a reservation. Mm-hmm. Now, because that is a phone, that one person's phone, if they don't answer, and I know the person does not have voicemail because they only allowed visual voicemail on that phone, you can text that number. 518-653-2086 and leave information, name, phone number, and email, and we will tender your reservation and we will text you a confirmation of that reservation in case you cannot get through live.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Padilla, for being on today's show. We kind of like the end, you know, 6:30. We are going to be back right after the news update, my bad. Again, thank you, Ms. Rodila's play. Oh, no, your play, right?
Yes, Fire Dance, mm-hmm. A selection of First Nation stories presented at Basilica Hudson, 110 South Front Street in Hudson, New York. You will be wearing face masks to enter, and you can call 518-653-2086 for reservations. Performances are May 21st and 22nd at 7 p.m. and May 23rd at 5 p.m. And again, all performances are free.
Okay. Thank you. We'll be back after the news update.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
From the WGXE Newsroom, this is the WGXE News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Stacey Sherman is reporting for Bloomberg that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo signed a bill April 16th requiring all internet service providers in New York to provide affordable high-speed access for low-income families. Cuomo said during a briefing Friday at the Northland Workforce Training Center in Buffalo, providers can charge those families no more than $15 a month. Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Alphabet Incorporated, joined Cuomo for the bill signing. Schmidt chairs a 15-member state commission focused on using technology to help the state reopen better than it was before the virus. It was also announced that an emergency fund from Schmidt Futures and the Ford Foundation will provide free internet access to 50,000 students statewide during the 2021-22 school year. The bill passed by the state legislature caps a basic broadband plan at $15 a month and a higher speed plan at $20. Currently, a basic high-speed plan costs, on average, more than $50 a month. Schmidt said universal broadband access is the first and most important priority of the commission. He said, and I quote, Internet is no longer optional, end quote. He added, and I quote, think of the generation that we could be creating that are not learning because we didn't give them Internet access, end quote. Read the full story at Yahoo Finance. Aaliyah Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Ghent resident Christopher Cornell and Hudson Second Ward Supervisor Abdus Maya, the local Working Families Party candidates in Columbia County Court. Both men are represented by John Champoli of counsel with Messina, Perello, and Hill of Sayville, Suffolk County. They claim official party signatures on the certificate of authorization for Working Families candidates clipped from other documents and are therefore not genuine signatures. Champoli filed a petition against Ghent Town Board candidates Mallory Moore, Lori Johnson, and Carl Quinn, and Second Ward Alderwoman Tiffany Garagia. Garagia is looking to unseat Maya as Second Ward Supervisor. Columbia County Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner Kenneth Dow said there is no indication that Cornell is running for office. Dow called the case total nonsense because a signature by law can be presented in a number of ways. He said, and I quote, there is a lot of stuff that is in the law that indicates this is perfectly permissible, so that's why I think this is really nonsense, end quote. There is a statewide coordinated attempt by the Republican Party to knock people off the Working Families Party line, and information has been fabricated by people willfully ignoring the law, Dow said. Champoli argues that an original document with original signatures must be filed with the County Board of Elections, and Working Families failed to do so. Dow said the focus on candidates Mort, Johnson, Quinn, and Garagia are based on where the petitioners Cornell and Maya can vote. Maya did not challenge any Hudson candidates on the ballot other than Garagia. However, the outcome of the case would impact if the almost 30 Working Families Party candidates can be listed on the party's ballot line because they are all on the same disputed certificate of authorization, Dow said. Maya said this week he challenged the Board of Elections specifically against Garagia. Maya said he has not yet received a decision from the board and only took action through the Board of Elections, not in court. Maya denied any connection to Cornell. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that on April 14th, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan signed an executive order as part of his county's version of a, and I quote, Green New Deal, end quote. The measure mandates any construction of renewable or green energy infrastructure projects must hire local unions and local private contractors and pay a prevailing wage. Ryan said, and I quote, to me, the core part of the Green New Deal is creating good-paying union jobs as we do that work to protect our environment, to transition to clean energy, and really to rebuild our infrastructure coming out of a once-in-a-century pandemic, end quote. He added, and I quote, today, Ulster County is going to continue to lead in both protecting our environment and making sure we're doing right by our working people and especially our partners in the building trades, end quote. The new law will be used on an upcoming solar project the county is building on a landfill. Todd Dorio, the president of the Hudson Valley Building and Constructing Trade Council, said, and I quote, evidence shows that higher wages due to prevailing wage does not slow the demand to build solar projects. Only 6 to 11% of total project cost on solar projects are wages. A 50% in labor costs would only increase the project cost by 3 to 5%. So on a $10 million solar project that we have maybe $300,000 would ensure good wages, end quote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Porcupine Soup is reporting an online free service that has been established to provide information on available locations that offer COVID-19 vaccinations, including many in Green and Columbia counties. VaccineFinder.org is a search tool that allows users to enter a zip code and distance range and to select the brand of vaccine preferred. A list of locations that offer the vaccine appears. including information on if the shots are currently in stock. The website is operated by epidemiologists and software developers at Boston Children's Hospital and supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It is updated daily. Appointments cannot be made through Vaccine Finder and must be made directly at the location offering the vaccine. Appointments are required at most locations. The Greene County list of sites includes Greene County Public Health, Kelly's Pharmacy in Greenville and Coxsackie, CVS in Cairo, Hannah Ford in Cairo, Walgreens in Greenville and Catskill, Price Chopper in Catskill, Walmart in Catskill, Wyndham Pharmacy and Wellness RX in Tannersville. As of April 15th, approximately 45% of Greene County's adult population had received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 29% have been fully vaccinated. Read the full story at porcupinesoup.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio. What's it called? Dang, I forgot. Oh my god. The song that you were just listening to was Get Lucky by who?
Daft Punk.
Daft Punk. Okay. Me and DJ Child Money is here, and our next guest is a local poet and recovering heroin addict who only 5 weeks ago was released from prison. He's here today to talk about his new show called Recover Together. Phil Schmidt.
Unlock doors. I'll be home again soon, back to my own room, where I'll sit and I'll think till I know what to do. I'll be a better man, and I'll have a better plan. And when the going gets too tough, well, I'll do the best I can, because I know that I can do this. I'm stronger now, and I can prove it. I've got this far, and now I can say that. I know that I'll get through this. But it wasn't always that way. At first, I struggled day to day, till I made myself believe that in the end, I'd be okay. I'm not moving on, just moving up. Now that I feel I found how to be enough. Not enough for other people, enough for me. It's time that I gained my own trust. I've loved and I've lost, and I've learned the true cost of a life filled with misery and the pain that I've caused. My trial was by fire, condemned by my desire. I was plagued for so long that I believed I was a liar. Now the gates have all closed, I'm locked in and alone, but I see what I never saw, that I'm in control. And my psyche is restored, I'll wallow no more, I'm feeling better for sure, my future's filled with unlocked doors.
That was Unlocked Doors, one of Phil's many poems that he had written while he was in jail or in prison. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, that poem, how do you bring the message from the poem into your show?
Well, I feel creativity is a huge part of recovery and coping in general. So, I'm really big about proving that the best way to recover is to do it together. Addiction is a really serious thing, and I spent a lot of time in jail just thinking about all of this. So I came up with a message that I wanted to tell, and I decided that I want to help people recover, or people that have had trouble with mental health or anything. And I want to let them know that getting help is okay. I'm trying to start a movement that will eliminate the stigma of the word junkie, because I think that's a big thing that stops people from even wanting to start to recover. And they need to know that it's okay, and they should be respected for wanting to recover. There's so much that we could do and that can be done to help these people that just isn't. Mm-hmm. And the first thing, I think, is to eliminate the stigma of the word junkie, like I said. And that's a big part of what I plan on doing.
So you said you have two other poems, right?
I do, but I'm going to use those right before I get off the air, just as closers. But they're super meaningful as well.
So can you tell us a little bit more about addiction and what you went through?
When I was 18 years old, my mother died. And that was very, very traumatic to me. And I wasn't sure how to cope with it emotionally. So I turned to hard drugs pretty quickly. And they truly ruined my life. In future shows, we'll talk way more about it, but it just spiraled down and out of control very quickly. It really ruined my life and changed everything about me, who I was, my morals. I honestly didn't care about who I hurt, and it got to the point where I committed a crime that was completely out of character. Anybody that knows me can tell you that what I did is not something that I would have done had I been thinking like my normal self. So my whole goal now is to help people who are going through something similar, or hopefully even before they start going through it. I want to use my story, my experiences, to inspire them and to change minds. I want to save people's lives, because I think everything I went through would end up being worth it if I could just use it to change even one person's life.
Okay. So what really made you, like, decide that the way you were going, like you said, I'm assuming you changed while you was in prison, right?
Yeah.
So what kind of led to that change?
Well, I did a lot of time in the box, actually, solitary confinement. And there's not much to do in there but think. So I spent a long time trying to figure out who I was, like who I am, who heroin had made me be, and how I could get back to being the original person that I am. And I'm a strong advocate for medically assisted recovery, and I strongly believe that the antidepressants that I was prescribed in prison helped me to get back to where I needed to be. But throughout all that, I really just thought about everything that I went through and how much I hurt my family and just all of these terrible things that I had done. And I just woke up one day and I decided I can't do it again. I can't do any of those things. That's not who I am. And it made me almost instantly realize my purpose. And this is my purpose. I'm here to to help people, to show them they don't have to do what I've done. And I'm very passionate about it. This really means a lot to me. And I'm going to work really hard on all of this.
Was there any specific person or group of people who helped you while you were in prison?
Well, it's actually, it's funny that you asked that. Really, my main support came from my sister, Justine. She was amazing. She's really, like, the biggest support system that I had even before I went to prison, but especially in prison. And if it weren't for her, none of what I'm doing right now would ever have even came to be. And speaking of people who motivated me, it's crazy. The first guest that you guys just had on the show, Mrs. Pamela Bedilla, she's been motivating me since I was very little through the shows that she used to do at my school. And I hope to be as passionate and successful with the movement I'm trying to start as she is with what she does.
So what is your ultimate goal for your podcast?
The ultimate goal? I want to fight the opiate epidemic, but not just the opiate epidemic. My ultimate goal would be to save one person's life, even one person. But what I hope will happen is that I save thousands. I wish I could save everybody. I don't want another person to have to die from doing drugs or to feel like there's no other answer to their problem to where they have to commit suicide. Mental health and addiction are, like, they go hand in hand, and it's really important that they notice they're not alone. And I want everybody who involves themselves with me, my movement, or whatever, and even the people who don't, I want them to know that even if they feel alone, they're not, that I'm with them,
that's
even
so
if nobody
noble.
Else is.
That's it, noble.
I appreciate that. It's just, I really mean it, and it's just, I don't want people to have to suffer